This is Scott Berguin from KSOW Radio here in Cottage Grove, and we are privileged to be speaking to Chris Snively, a member of Veterans for Peace, who's been on the central leg of the Bring Them Home Now tour, and is now back at home in St. Louis, still working on the tour, I'm sure. Hello, Chris.
Hey, Scott. How's it going?
Very good. Thank you for contacting me to get an update on what's going on, get your perspective, and looking forward to it. So where do you want to start?
Well, I guess one place to start is kind of what I was going to tell you about, in that it's kind of relaxed back here in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
I work for the national office here, but so we got a lot of stuff going on. We're real busy with that, but it's like a different kind of level of work compared to what we were on the tour. It was mm-hmm. so great. All the cities we went to, people were excited, wanting us to go with them to each place, and they have a really full schedule for us. So it's nice to support it from the rear, too, to be mm-hmm. rear guard, as far as, and then to support the front line. So both knowing both of those is pretty good. So.
Right. Well, obviously, all of it's important because you're supporting a lot of people out there who are on the road, and you know, I've been talking to several of them on each of the legs, and it's just it's phenomenal how this thing, as others have said, sprung up from a ditch in Crawford, Texas on August 6th, and is
right,
now
exactly.
It's this amazing thing.
Speaking about that a little bit, I've heard a lot of people talk about how, you know, a lot of our detractors, everyone knows those kind of sites,
right.
Rush Limbaugh, the Matt Drudge kind of stuff, how
right.
this is a big conspiracy, the organized left. It just makes me laugh because, literally, I work for Veterans for Peace, and we had our convention this year in Dallas,
mm-hmm.
And that's Cindy Sheehan was one of our speakers there, and she
mm-hmm.
she thought since she's going to Dallas, she might as well go to Crawford. It's so
right.
close.
Right.
But literally, we put this together. There are four people that work in our office in St. Louis, and
mm-hmm.
then we could only find two volunteers in the whole state of Texas. I mean, one in Dallas
mm-hmm.
on the ground there, and one in Austin who had to do that drive back and forth all the time. So
oh,
then,
boy.
When they say the organized left did this, I mean, I wish we were that organized. So.
Right.
But it's been really great. It's so spontaneous and organic. It's really people feeling they can talk for the first time about something they've been keeping inside their house. They're going out in the public and
right,
right. now.
Well, that certainly is my perspective and feeling from someone who started vigiling against the war before it started. We're coming up on about a 3-year anniversary of that. And, you know, it's been, things have definitely changed. We get
mm-hmm.
more positive response now than we did then. But
oh,
this
yeah.
has basically brought all these people's efforts in small and big communities all over the country out into the fore. And so that's,
right.
it's amazing.
Yeah, that's the thing. We're just meeting normal people along the way who just show up to our entrance when we first come to a city. Like in Columbus, I don't know if any of the other participants from the Central Route told you, but we just ran into this one guy named Stephen Williams.
Mm-hmm.
He was just walking to the library down by the state capitol building. He saw our RV pull up, and he's like, you know, what do you guys got going on? And we're like, we're out, you know, talking to people about the war and, you know, how we can come to solution on it. And he's like, oh, I got a cousin in Iraq. Can I hang out with you guys today? So he did, and he'd never been able to do this before. We took him in to meet Senator Voinovich and Senator DeWine's aides, and
mm-hmm.
he's tried to get there before because in his area, he lives in a historically black area that's kind of, they're in his words, gentrifying it
mm-hmm.
and driving out a lot of the poor people to try to make room for richer people. And
uh-huh.
he's been trying to talk to senators about that for a while, but he's never had the opportunity.
Mm.
Luckily, a lot of these people don't want to happen to them what happened to President Bush and Crawford. So
right.
they're letting us come up, and
right.
we're bringing regular citizens in with us, and it's been really great that they can get their viewpoints in a forum that they normally couldn't get. So
right. Well,
it's really fun.
Let's back up a little bit, Chris.
Sure.
You were in Crawford.
Well, I was near Crawford. The thing is, when I worked at the convention, which is in Dallas,
mm-hmm.
we had to stay there with all the buildings we rented and keep putting on the programs.
Okay.
Half our convention took off for Crawford, so
mm-hmm.
I wanted to be with them, but I had to do that and then come back and support in St. Louis.
Sure,
but
sure.
then I picked up on the tour from St. Louis through Pittsburgh.
Okay, so the Central Lake stopped in St. Louis.
Yes.
Okay, I remember that. I'm sure I talked to somebody while they're in St. Louis.
It's yeah, not, probably Hart about that time.
Yeah, that could be. That's quite likely.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me then, maybe back up a little bit more. You're
sure.
in Veterans for Peace.
Yeah,
what's your story? What got you involved in this?
Okay, sure. Well, my military experience, I was in the Army from 1992 to 96, and the last year of my Army time was spent in Bosnia.
Mm-hmm.
So I went there after their war as part of the first NATO's mission to enforce the peace plan they had. And in seeing the destruction that can be reaped upon a country in war, I wanted to do something in the rest of my life to prevent, you know, a breakdown like that,
mm-hmm.
and try to, when I see it, you know, talk about what it's like to be in that kind of situation.
Right.
I'd kind of gotten away from that. I was in the Army, like I said, till 96, and I stayed in Germany as a civilian and for a couple years, and then I came back to the United States in 98. In between 98 and 2001, I was working in the telecommunications industry. I was kind of caught up in that, making
mm-hmm.
good money and not really caring about other people's problems too much. I kind of gotten away from that mission that I kind of wanted for myself after Bosnia,
mm-hmm.
but September 11th changed all that. I was hoping that we could provide a great example as America, as
mm-hmm.
what we could do to, you know, we're not going to be bullied by a few punk terrorists.
Mm-hmm.
But, and my heart dropped a little bit at Afghanistan, but I could understand. I was hoping we wouldn't go to war, but
mm-hmm.
I can understand some of the reasons for
right.
that. But then I saw this Iraq war coming, and I had to find what people were doing out there, and I didn't think that was the right move at all. I was listening to people like General Anthony Zenny, who
mm-hmm.
had Tommy Franks' job before Tommy Franks did, and he was saying it ain't right. And I was
mm-hmm.
listening to one of my commanders in the Balkans, Wesley Clark, who said that, you know, this ain't going to be right. So
mm-hmm.
I found out what veterans think out there, because those two, as veterans, I respected. And
mm-hmm.
I stumbled upon Veterans for Peace, found out that their headquarters was in St. Louis, and called them up, asked if they needed some help. And that's the way it's been going. I've been working for them in their national headquarters here in St. Louis since May of 2004.
All right.
Yep.
So were you, I know the story that you hear fairly frequently is that
mm-hmm.
September 11th happened, and my son or I decided to go back and join the National Guard or whatever
mm-hmm.
and try to help in some way. And then, of course, a lot of those people ended up then getting kind of finding out that all of us not as they were being told. Did you
right.
have that? Did you feel that temptation to go to reenlist in any way?
I did a bit, but I had just started college as well,
mm-hmm.
and if I wanted to go back in the military, I wanted to be as an officer. I wanted to be on the other side. I'd already done the enlisted thing.
Uh-huh.
You can't become an officer until you've finished college, so I thought, I'll be able to talk to people here during this time. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I had the temptation to reenlist, but at the same time, I wanted to do it in a different way,
sure.
where I, you know, I'd have a little more say in what's going on. So yeah, the temptation was definitely there. It was there with most of the people on our tour. I think you've talked to Hart about this,
right.
probably.
Mm-hmm.
He joined up right on 9/11.
Right.
I mean, that's
right.
what he thought he had to do. And
mm-hmm.
And a lot of the other families who have lost children in the Gold Star Families for Peace, they also had people who joined up around that time
right.
too.
So right.
yeah, there's always that temptation to go back, but you want to also, as an American, find out where you can best fit in. And
right.
I'd best fit in.
I think we've learned from this, at least this administration anyway, that it pays to take a deep breath. And I think it wasn't too long after September 11th that, at least to me, I guess they kind of revealed themselves as to what direction they were going to go. You know, the things about you're either for us or you're against us and that
mm-hmm.
sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, that it's very understandable, I think, the call to duty, so to speak, to country, for people to feel like they want to get out there and help in some way. You know, obviously, that's what it's, in a lot of ways, what it's about.
Right. And I didn't appreciate that at all from this administration and the polarizing rhetoric that
mm-hmm.
they have. You know, they extended that you are with us or with the terrorists from an international call to an American call as well, and
right.
you couldn't anything you disagree with them would be against America, or you're with the terrorists, and that's totally not true, because you need scrutiny upon what you're doing, especially in foreign policy, because one person isn't going to have all answers. They
right.
would be God, and no man is God, no woman is God. So
right.
So they were disdainful of any criticism, and I think that's hurt us in our options
mm-hmm.
really badly since then.
I think you're right on with that. Yes, that we've gone down a very narrow road, and
right, yeah.
it's gotten
and
us into quite a mess.
Right, exactly. And we're trying to change that, because what we're trying to do out there is get people talking, because this affects all Americans. It's not blue state blood or red state blood. It's American blood that's being shed out there, and Rocky blood that doesn't need to happen. Mm-hmm. And we need to get together, pro-war, anti-war, everyone, to start talking about this and bringing it to a conclusion, because mm-hmm. it's not helping anyone.
Right.
That's what we think. And to cut down on that polarizing rhetoric between us, because we're all Americans, we're being affected here. It won't usually come to blows when we argue about it. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, unfortunately, it might, but it'd be usually verbal blows, and
right.
then we can still go away as Americans and friends.
Sure,
afterwards.
Sure. So you are going to rejoin the tour when it arrives in
Washington, D.C.? In Washington, D.C. I'll be waiting for them there when they pull in the morning of the 21st, morning to afternoon of the 21st. I'll be there on the ground setting things up.
Uh-huh. So. Well, you got your work cut out for you, don't you?
Oh, we sure do. It's something that's been really good with us. And we have, it's a small backbone support network, because we've never done anything on this scale, but we're learning as we go. People mm-hmm. are getting better with their speeches, because we're not paid public speakers or
right.
anything. I did some presentations in college, but that was the extent of my public speaking. So people are getting really good. And one thing that's been inspiring to me is that just all kinds of different people from mm-hmm. all different age groups. Because
right.
Veterans for Peace has been around since 1985, and they were made up of mostly Vietnam veterans. And sometimes they were guilty of what some people accuse them of Vietnam veterans just sitting around talking about the old days.
Right, right.
But with the addition of Military Families Speak Out, Iraq Veterans Gets the War, and unfortunately, the people who have lost children or relatives, the Gold Star families, it's added a new dimension. We've had people on the bus from all different age groups, 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and we're hoping to get some older people than that, too, some mm-hmm. people that World War II vets to come along with us and tell their story. So.
Okay, well, I have to ask this question,
really,
and I don't
mm-hmm.
mean to put you in an uncomfortable position.
Sure.
I've been observing this from a distance, so I don't even, to tell you the truth, we don't even have TV here. the town does. It's not
right.
We're not that backwards, but
right.
we decided
yeah,
not
know,
to have
I know.
Television.
Out there.
And
yep.
especially with what's been going on in New Orleans and the what some people are seeing as pretty blatant racism
mm-hmm.
in terms of the response, what would you say is the racial mix of the folks that you're getting, not only are participating in the tour, but are coming out in various places? Obviously, that would vary from town to town. But
right. Yeah. I'm glad you asked that, Scott, because, yeah, there is a disparity that we need to bring more of our Latino brothers and sisters, more of our African-American brothers and sisters on, more of our Asian-American brothers and sisters on, because it's a small minority of our group and the groups who come out to meet us. We do meet a lot of, thankfully, it's a part of it being as veterans, they have a good makeup. So we do have more African-American and Latino members than a lot of peace groups do.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Because they're veterans, but there's still that outreach with the for lack of a better word, I don't like this term, but minority communities.
Mm-hmm.
And we have, for example, on the southern route, our only African-American is my executive director of Veterans for Peace. He was on the route for a while. He's an African-American, and he's our director, our mm-hmm. main executive leadership in VFP,
mm-hmm.
Veterans for Peace. And his son is just, he found out when he was on the tour just a couple of days ago that he's going to Iraq. So
right.
he went back to Fort Campbell and visited his son, who's
mm-hmm.
in the military. And as far as we have Beatrice Salvador, who is a Latina,
right.
Mexican-American from Texas. But other than that, it's a lot of mostly Anglo-Saxon Americans.
Mm-hmm.
But we're changing that everywhere we go, because we're telling people that, you know, come on into the group, because this is affecting us all and we need to talk about
right,
it.
Right.
So I'm glad you asked that, Scott. That's outreach we get everywhere, because we'll get African Americans and all different racial groups
mm-hmm.
coming up to us asking, how can I bring my community into this?
Right,
so
right. Well, obviously, it's impacting minority, you know, people of color,
yeah,
those communities.
Higher percentage.
A higher
yeah.
percentage, right. It's, and
definitely.
As it seems to always do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, you know, there's, of course, recruiting issues and all those things, too. And I know that that's one of the things from talking to folks that I've really been impressed about is the wide range of activities and approaches that are encased in this tour. I mean, talking to congressional leaders, some of the people have been doing some, joining some counter-recruitment efforts, standing in front of military bases, doing the marches and the rallies, the vigils and speaking tours, and going to colleges, and just, I mean, I could go on and on.
Right,
but it's really a wide-ranging approach that's... You know, that's one of the best ways to deal with that issue of representation of people of color, you know, is to get
exactly,
out there.
Exactly, and across the board. I'm glad you mentioned the recruiting offices. A lot of times they are set up in disadvantaged neighborhoods near disadvantaged schools.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not so much a case of counter-recruiting with us as making sure that people are given the facts about what they're going to experience, because it's in the... If you just look at pure interest, the recruiter isn't necessarily in his or her interest to tell you the bad stories of what
right.
can happen, and that's where we fill in the gaps
mm-hmm.
and let people know it isn't all just college money and travel, that you might
right.
have to do some really tough things.
Right, you might see some things that will impact you for the rest of your life.
Exactly, and then talking, and Hart is great having there, our Iraq veteran against the war,
mm-hmm.
who's with us, because he's done it, and people really listen to him. Because he's been there, you know.
Right. Well, and he embodies an incredible amount of legitimacy just in the fact that he served his time,
mm-hmm.
and then he also went through the very difficult process of becoming a conscientious objector. So he's kind of like played both sides. He's done them both. And
exactly.
Like I said, it's we're all very, of course, grateful that he made it back.
Right.
And that he's part of this whole part of the whole movement.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Because he was there in war, and he was in a situation where he could have shot somebody, and he realized that that wasn't it. That wasn't
mm-hmm.
what he was going to do. But it's just like Jesus on the cross. You know, Satan says you can do anything. You know, you can kill all these people and get over that. But he's like, he knows he can't just. It's not about him. It's
mm-hmm.
about. He really became a good Christian after that, I believe. He
right.
found soul in his heart in loving thy enemies rather than, you know, smiting them.
Right, so. Right. And it's a powerful thing. And I got a chance to interview him, and I wish I could do more to get his story out to people, because I think especially young people who might be thinking about joining the military, and also soldiers that are already involved, that give them the hope that there is a different way to look at this, possibly.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are tending in that direction, here's a person who had the discipline and the strength to carry through both parts of his life,
right,
and survived, and is a much better person for it. I'm sure he would agree.
Yeah. Oh yeah, exactly. He's gotten to know himself really well, and he's able to bring people to that point of what it's like being there and what it's like to say no. You know, and they understand, they really relate with him. Even the people that disagree with him have said nothing, but he's a polite, nice young man
right,
who
right.
is good to talk to, even though I don't agree with him. That's
right.
what they'll say. So.
Right. Well, that's good, yes.
That's what we're trying to do.
If yeah. only we all, you know, people would say the same thing about all of us, huh?
Exactly. Exactly, Scott.
Okay, well, you know, Chris, I think it'd be great to check in with you again, and if
mm-hmm.
not before, certainly when you do get to Washington, I'd love to hear
Absolutely.
Your perspective on what's going on and how things seem to be coming together.
Oh yeah, it's going to be huge, and anybody yeah. can come out.
Yep.
One quick thing, I want to tell the people in Pittsburgh, I was just there recently, that they're great, and whoever might be listening to this from Pittsburgh, they have free buses. Just get a hold of the Thomas Merton Center.
Okay.
They got as many buses you want to get in there, and throughout your communities. I know just if you can't do anything and what you can't make it to Washington, it's really hard for you out in Oregon
mm-hmm.
to make it. That's a long, long way. But if you can't, you can do something. You're near Eugene there. You can do something in your town.
Right. And that's exactly what we're planning.
Going on.
And we do have some folks from this area that are coming to D.C.
Excellent.
So that's
tell them to come see us.
Okay. All
we'll
right.
have a tent set up.
Yeah.
Because it's all about, it's not just the big cities or the East Coast or mm-hmm. the blue states. It's about, even though Oregon is a quote-unquote blue state now, I guess. So.
Yeah.
But it's really wonderful that every small community out here is doing good.
Yeah. And that's true. And we appreciate what you all are doing with the tour and highlighting, emphasizing very strongly this the need to get our troops out of Iraq and move on in a more positive, peaceful way. And boy, it should just get more intense and exciting, I'm sure, all the way up to and through the 24th.
It will, because we're bringing a sad message, but a positive message.
That's
and
right.
There's hope for the future. It doesn't have to, like Steve Earle said down in Camp Casey, it doesn't have to be 56,000 of ours and 2 million of theirs, because they're all ours.
Right.
You know, it's all lives, and we it doesn't have to get to that point like it did in Vietnam. We have a chance now to stop the bleeding.
That's true, and I believe Steve Earle also said, or saying, the revolution starts now. So let's get on with it, and the kind of revolution we need, which is to basically force this administration to bring an end to this war.
Exactly. We appreciate your help out there, Scott.
Okay, thank you, Chris. And again, we'll check in again with you, okay?
Take care, bud.
Yeah.
Alrighty.
Bye.
Bye-bye.